you've said for a number of speeches now that you don't expect inflation to rise back to the target until 2018. The Fed, obviously, you're not just any economist, you are in the Fed influences inflation. How much do you worry about the downward effect that your own words could have or are having on inflation expectations?
Yeah, I wish we were in a position where I didn't have to say that. I wish we were in a position where monetary policy was providing sufficient stimulus that we'd be getting back to target more rapidly than 2018. That's the position you want to be in, is that I don't have to give speeches like that because inflation is going to get back to target. I'm relaying information of that is in the Congressional Budget Office's forecast that it provides to Congress. They have a very similar outlook for inflation. In the FOMC minutes, there's not a specific number given, but board staff reported as having an outlook for inflation where it remains below target for a few years. So I think I'm merely reporting the facts. I wish I was in a position to be able to deliver different facts.
To stay with the inflation theme, two questions. One is kind of a follow-up. Would you consider a higher inflation target? Would that be good for expectations and thus pull up inflation?
I think the challenge with moving the target in either direction, up or down, is that is credibility. You move it once, and then people start to think, well, maybe you'll move it again, and then monetary policy will start to lose its effectiveness because people will think every move is really about the target as opposed to actually trying to provide short-term stimulus.
Okay, and then the other question I have is looking at this chart here, point out that inflation has been an average of 1.5% since December. So why are you confident that more monetary stimulus will ultimately drive it up?
Well, that's a good question. I think that it's critical for us to be providing more stimulus in the context of communicating effectively as well about that stimulus. I think that's really been a key for us would be to be communicating effectively and then taking actions to live up to that communication that we're trying to get inflation back to 2% as rapidly as possible. I made suggestions, as you saw, to the committee about how to provide language of that kind in our FOMC statement. The fact that language isn't there and is a sign that it leaves something on the table that we could do, I think, that would be concrete to try to move inflation back more rapidly.
Do you think that would be enough? The suggestions that you made in your speech would be enough to...
It's moving in the right direction, and then we would see if that would be enough or not. That's the way, I don't know with certainty what the right steps would be, but I know that what moves, as I described in my speech today, I know what the sign is, so I know what would move us in the right direction.
Further on inflation and further on, and you mentioned credibility, with the drifting away, keeping, just each month there's a little more distance. If your plan isn't adopted, if that kind of a thing doesn't become reality, how much do you worry about credibility on being able to achieve mandates?
Yeah,
I'm sorry about that mandate.
It's a risk. I think my benchmark outlook does, as I described, does have inflation going back to 2% within, I think, an unduly long period of time, but still getting back to 2% in by 2018. But I think we're creating risk for ourselves on the credibility front. I think you see some of that risk materializing in the decline in market-based measures of inflation expectations. So I am concerned about that. You see a little bit of slippage in the survey professional forecasters outlook for inflation more near term, 2015 and 2016. So we are creating a risk for ourselves on the credibility front.
Creating a risk on credibility if?
In terms of if inflation continues to be persistent below 2%, people's beliefs that it will get back to 2% will start to erode. And so then their belief about what our target is for inflation will start to slide downwards.
And that's important because?
Because of the fact that anchored expectations are the heart of what makes monetary policy effective at combating adverse shocks. People know when we move an interest rate, it's not about trying to reflect a change in our target. It's actually trying to reflect a change in the stimulus we're trying to provide on a short and medium run basis.
And how would you explain to the average person why it's important to have inflation at about 2%?
So that's a balancing act that goes back to actually 1990s, the debate that took place in the Fed on this dimension. It's a balancing act between two things. One is high inflation is costly, and we know that, and everyone knows that. On the other hand, the average level of inflation feeds into the average level of interest rates, essentially one for one. And so if you keep inflation, average level of inflation too low, that gives you less room to move interest rates when times get bad. So right now, we would have liked to have moved interest rates lower over the past 6 years, and we've been stuck at zero. How much room we have to provide stimulus is governed by the average level of interest rates, and that's going to be lower if we keep inflation low. So that balancing act, high inflation costly, benefits to keeping inflation, but there are benefits to keeping inflation high on average, has led to a 2% conclusion.
May I ask about how your assessment of risk to the economy from international things has changed in recent days?
You know, it's definitely a picture that's gotten gloomier more recently, both on the growth side, but also on the price side. You start to you see disinflationary pressures in a number of countries. The U.S. is certainly trade is important to us, but most of the impetus and impulse for our economy remains domestic. The biggest risk I worry about in terms of the U.S. economy is an undue tightening of monetary policy, an unduly early tightening of monetary policy. I think that is the greatest risk that I worry about. That we'll start to raise interest rates too early, and that will lead to adverse outcomes for our economy.
Let me go back just to a comment that you made last week that you didn't repeat today in your speech, that if inflation expectations do better than what you said, that a 2015 rate hike could be a possibility. So, I mean, how likely is that in your view, and what where do you watch for signs that that could be happening?
Yeah, not very likely, in my view. I was a little surprised that it seemed to get a lot of media attention. I guess I had felt it was implicit in what I had been saying earlier, and the speech is a repetition of one, as you may have gleaned, is a repetition of one that I'd given before. So I didn't mean to say something new and startling there. But all I wanted to emphasize is my policy stance is data dependent, outlook dependent. If my outlook were to change sufficiently, then my policy stance would change accordingly. I don't see that as very likely. I'd have to see upward movements in core inflation, something more on the wage side. That would be the kind of information I'd be looking for.
It being, when you say it not being likely, you meant?
Increase in the inflation outlook and sufficiently material that would lead it to be appropriate to raise interest rates, begin liftoff in 2015.
Now, going back to the last FOMC meeting, you dissented, and obviously you know that. Can you give us an idea of what you would want to see changed in the forward guidance or the stance of the committee to not again dissent in December?
Oh, well, it just depends on what's going to happen in the meeting and how things are going to transpire. I'm not a big believer in dissenting about the same thing over and over again. I approach every meeting sort of a fresh opportunity to make my views heard, and it really would depend then on how things happen in the meeting. So I don't have a really a sharp answer to that question at this stage. I, it's a, you know, you go in there and see what happens, and, you know, we'll see.
But in terms of that considerable time as being sort of marking a, anyway, some sort of a pause between now and when we might raise rates, I mean, wouldn't that be the kind of a bulwark that you would want?
I won't be caught in this trap, no. no, you know, I think it's important for us to, you know, the concerns I had in October, I anticipate having in December, which is the concerns about the kind of downside risk to inflation that Jeff was mentioning. And I think we have to be very cautious about not sending signals that we're going to be removing accommodation unduly rapidly, given those kinds of risks. And changes in the language in the statement that send those signals would be problematic, I think.
The end of QE that we saw in October was pretty well choreographed. We, you know, we laid out when it, you know, measured steps, and it kind of ended when the markets expected to. Do you see rate liftoff, informing the markets, do you see rate liftoff happening in that same kind of choreographed, laid out way when it does happen?
You know, I think there's I think the important thing for us is to be communicating about, I think we should be more clear about the kind of conditions that will exist when we're going to raise rates, what will lead us to raise rates. I thought the language that was added, you know, I did dissent, but I thought the language that was added to the statement about making clear that, look, monetary policy is not on a calendar, it's going to respond to conditions. I think these are important messages to be sending. And so that's the kind of clarity I would hope that we'd be doing more of.
Given how far the unemployment rate has fallen, why hasn't inflation risen more?
Yeah, good question. I think that we saw a number of countervailing forces during the recession. There's been a big question that economists are struggling with is, why didn't inflation fall more during the recession? And some good work has been coming out of the Fed on that, I think, pointing to some of the increases in costs that firms faced because of financing costs went up. It was harder to get financing. That made it more costly for them to produce goods and services. That pushes up on inflation. That was helping keep inflation high. I think one speculation that I have is, and it's purely speculation at this point, is that it's getting easier for firms to finance themselves. So that cost pressure is coming down a little bit. And so you see an upward pressure on inflation. Overall, though, the main predictor of future inflation is inflation. And the fact inflation has been as long as it has been, it's just a very tough drag to fight against.
Sort of a more long-term issue for the Fed is I think you said that you don't expect once you get back up to a sort of normal Fed funds rate, this is going to be lower than it had been historically. How should the Fed set itself up to deal with the possibility, if you think it's a possibility, of returning to the zero lower bound in future shocks? I mean, is this, first of all, is this a more likely in the future in your view? And if so, what should or could the Fed do to prevent that?
I think these are outstanding questions and the ones that we should be talking about more. I do see that over the long run, interest rates will remain lower than they were historically. That does introduce, I think, a risk of hitting the zero lower bound more often, and I think that behooves us to look back and think, okay, we did a lot of stuff at the zero lower bound, but do we have the right framework in place to deal with more frequent blows or stays at the zero lower bound? If you go back before the crisis, the zero lower bound was when we simulated our models, It seemed like this rule around was something that was going to happen pretty infrequently, and we wouldn't be very persistent. I think our thinking about that has to change, and we have to think about whether or not the framework that we've been using, that we were using before the crisis, in sort of quote unquote normal times, should that be our normal framework at once interest rates start to get back to their long run levels? I think there are good reasons to rethink that, just given we have to be more effective, I think, as dealing with the zero bound than we were this past time. I think the pictures I showed on employment inflation just show, we we need to be better at that than we were.
When you say the framework, what are you thinking of using the Fed fund rate as a primary policy tool? Or
I think that some of the do we have the right kind of communications in place? Are we communicating? Are we following sufficiently a goal-based monetary policy? For example, this is something I've talked about in the past. Targeting the inflation rate or the price level? Would targeting the price level have been more helpful as opposed to targeting the inflation rate in this time period? These are points I've raised in the past, and I think these are things that we should be thinking about. I think just going back to, boy, let's get back to the Taylor rule, because that worked well in 1995. That is not the right answer to this. I think we want to have a framework and approach to policy that will minimize the risk of hitting the zero bound, but also be more effective at dealing with the zero bound once we get there.
Yeah, one more on inflation, by the way.
Sure, I could talk about all that.
So you talked about when it's not appropriate to raise in 15 under, with this inflation. How do you view your decision-making process as far as do you want to print some CPI market-based implications or evidence that things are going in the right way? What is the kind of the recipe for your thinking as far as what would get you to that kind of a point?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a wide range of sources of information I would rely on to reaching that. But you certainly want to be starting to see a more sustained upward movement in core inflation that didn't seem to be just trackable back to transitory effects. That's a starting point. I suspect that would not come without having more wage pressures, but maybe it would. Seeing something more sustained and clearly non-transitory and core, I think would be, that would be a big deal for me. Yeah.
How much do you factor in then the low commodity prices, the low energy prices that we're seeing is holding down inflation?
That's a transitory phenomenon. The committee said that they expect near-term low inflation because of these downward pressures on. That has a little bit of effect on core, but it's mainly affecting headline. That's not my concern. My concern is, first, to go out a year to 2 years out, I think I'm really trying to get outside the bands of this kind of disinflationary force you're talking about. And then we go out further, the market-based measures, some of the longer-term ones have started to slide downwards, and that really is more. So all of this tries to get beyond the transitory forces you're describing.
Are you, may I just bring up one other issue? Do you see anything in the Fed's, in the evolution of the Fed's relationship with Congress that changes your estimation of how healthy that relationship is?
Not particularly. I guess I don't have any particular thoughts on that.
Just kind of asking that in the context that we'll be hearing from another president in the Senate on Friday. I believe the hearing is Friday in Senate banking.
Oh, you're talking about President Dudley, is that right?
Yeah, okay. And just the context that we're hearing much criticism from both ends of the political spectrum. And I was wondering there's always been tension, but do you think that this has evolved in a meaningful way recently?
I guess the short answer is no.
That was a short answer.